Who could forget the greatest mumble rap songs of musky fishing?
Musky 360 Records is proud to present the greatest musky mumble rap compilation ever compiled.
Figure eights, Musky Gang. Musky Gang. Musky Gang, Musky Gang, Musky Gang, Musky Gang, Musky Gang, Musky Gang, Musky Gang. Musky Gang, Musky Gang, Musky Gang, Musky Gang, Musky Gang. Spending big cash on new baits. Don't mess around my figure eights, Musky Gang.
But the hits don't end there. To present the most mumbly musky compilation ever presented. You might not even know what they're saying.
I was gone, made me dig it. Maybe I got to dig it. Moving up and run away, bring out dropping bombs like sonar. Same old day, same old way. Gotta catch up here somewhere. I don't care at all. You feel me throwing bass up.
Just 49 payments of $49.99 will get you 4,000 hours plus of the greatest musky mumble rap songs ever recorded!
Who could forget the timeless classic, White Poseidon? I love mumbling. I love musky.
And who doesn't, Jay? You can get the greatest musky compilation of mumble rap today from Slime Life Records for just 69 payments of $69.99. This compilation could be yours. Elmer's standing by.
Yep.
All right, folks, welcome to the Mumble Rap 360 podcast, a Jaybird.
Huh? How's your Northwoods rap career going? I feel that.
You know, you feel me?
I feel you. That was amazing.
That's some great stuff. It was amazing.
Folks,
love it.
Sorry. If you don't like mumble rap like I do, whatever. You know,
funny.
You can't do Boston songs every week, Jay.
Well, it's more than a feeling, you know.
More than a feeling. Anyway,
yeah,
it's cold up north. It's cold down south. It's cold everywhere. But I'd say the only housekeeping thing we need to do is there are free. It's free shipping on Shield Rods right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Hello. Good stuff.
Working on, going to have that big interview on the Titan Jr., the dude that's been rocking them on Green Bay. I'm going to take care of that this week. It's been busy for me, but Titan Jr. signups are there. The other thing, Jay was digging around in the bait cave of the Muskie Shop.
Yep.
And he found a tiny, infinitesimal amount of coffee mugs we had printed up.
Oh, yeah, right.
You can get a Musky 360 podcast coffee mug. It's got sort of a Simpson-esque Jay.
Yeah, the animation thing going on there.
And a Steve on it. We just had a hoot with these things. Those were some prizes from the Bash this year. We found them there. If you want a coffee mug, God bless you. We got them. They're fun.
Yep, there's a few left. Just a few.
Just a tidbit. A dollop, if you will, Jay.
Yep.
Jay, so when you're looking for inspiration in mumble rap there in the Northwoods, what is it just the snow that numbs your mouth and you can't articulate words, or what's going on there? You just get a mouthful of snow.
There. That's great. Yeah. That's drawing the lines together. Very nicely done, Steve.
I'm astute.
I'm going to have to agree with you.
Jay, can I say this?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Jay, I'm a stoat. Do you know what I'm I'm a stoat.
No, not exactly.
That small little woodland creature. It's like a wild ferret.
Gross.
I'm a stoat. Anyway. Got some coffee mugs there, Jay.
I'm still laughing from the intro. I'm sorry.
Dude, like somebody sent it. We got one email. This is how easily sway we are. Like, I got one email. Like, why are there no musky mumble rap songs?
Like, what did you tell me? There?
I'm like,
well, you're like, Jay, you got to do a mumble rap here. I'm like, a what?
if it makes me laugh, we're gonna do it. I mean, I just don't care. It's like year 4,000 here on the podcast. There's 7 billion episodes, and if you haven't picked it up for me and Jay and Joe and the Tube Screamer and everybody at this point, come on. If it makes me laugh, we're gonna do it, and that cracked me up, dude.
Yeah.
That much like there's a, I read it to Jay. I've got to take care of this week. I had a bunch of Pepsis, right?
Yeah.
And I said something about a musky fan fiction. A dude actually wrote some Fred Palermo / Elmer Jensen fan fiction.
Oh, yeah.
I can't read it on the podcast, but
it was exceptional.
I teared up. Let's just put it that way.
It was great.
I didn't tear up because it was sweet. I teared up because it was ridiculous. But I'm going for the lols, Jay. The LOLs.
Yeah. Yeah. I made a copy of it from the email and I showed it to Fred, and I don't know if he had heard that podcast yet at that point. And I saw him reading it. Next thing I know, there's copies everywhere. So he must have been handing them out to his whole family. Yeah,
he's like, this is kind of disturbing.
He said, but volume one, there's more coming. There's a sequel to that. He's working on it.
It gets kind of weird.
Can't wait to see it. It
gets kind of weird. Yeah. You know, because all the cool people listen to the podcast, Jay. Not really. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the podcast of the normies.
Well, most of them do.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everybody listens to the podcast pretty nuts. We have a great time. Get you a podcast mug. You know.
Before they're gone.
What I want to see is somebody... So we'll do a signed Titan, right? Jay, you got to send me some Titans here shortly. I'm out of them. Okay. Do you have those Steve's Musky Thunders in the office, by the way?
The drink, the energy drink?
No, the headlocks. I've been catching fish on the hold those back. I'll take care of it this week. I need some Titans. We gave them away. We've given them all away. Give it away, give it away, give it away now.
Yeah.
So,
Titan Juniors.
What I'm going to get at is first person to buy a podcast mug, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then fill it with something horrible is going to win a signed Titan. I want to see you like... You can like film a video of you drinking your Pepsi Clear, like fill it up and chug it. Or you could fill the entire thing up with pickle juice or whatever. We'll do something ridiculous. Maybe a wooden Titan or something super exclusive there, but get you a podcast mug.
Sounds like a TikTok video to me.
Getting weird. I dropped my phone, Jay. Weird.
There goes another app on my phone.
If you can figure out something weird to do with a Musky 360 mug, let me know. Titan Jr., holy crap, dude.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how stoked I am about this. So, Jay,
Yep.
Livingston lures. I'm in love with them, right? It's been my entire week this week. They, after the Titan, they were like, dude, what do you want to do? What's next? What's next? You know, you have to bait that successful. Everybody's going, what's next? I said, it has to be the Titan Jeter. That thing is ridiculous. And then you've seen the other thing we're working on. Rutrow. You know the one I sent you? Yeah.
The pictures on my phone? Kind of top secret.
Super top secret. So
super cool. Super cool.
It's going to be... they listen. That's the cool thing about like the people at Livingston. I'm like, this is what needs to happen. They're like, why? And I'm like, here's why. And I show them and I send them a prototype. And they're like, okay, cool. So got some great stuff coming out this year from them. Yeah. Also, my buddy Ben's got a bait coming out from Livingston this year. We'll talk about it here shortly. But Titan Junior signups on the app, on the blah, blah, blah. I'm so excited about that bait because the results we've had on big walleye, big bass, big smallies have been phenomenal.
Yeah, the crossover effect.
The crossover effect.
Fantastic. Other bait, as expected, I saw that coming. I know. I really did. I'm impressed.
Oh, it's ridiculous. The other bait, and I love it. Bill from Slammer's got that 6-inch fatty coming out.
Yeah.
Me and you, he gave us prototypes. We fished them last year. If you're a crankbaiter, you fish shad bass, you fish some fish that need a big fat action. If you're, oh, holy crap, that's a great crankbait, dude.
I mean, yeah, you saw it. You know, first day I was fishing, I got a good fish. And I gave it to a friend, and next day, she got a 45-incher on it. She's hooked.
I mean, it's...
I talked to Bill, and guess what? They're coming in early January.
Yep, great bait.
So we're going to have them in all our custom colors, too.
They're going to be an SP Tiger.
Yep.
Oh, dude. SP Tiger, Slammer Fatty. Me and Jay crushed them up north on that thing.
Yep.
It is devastating. It's a great bait. It to me, that's one of these baits, if I don't know what else to throw, or I've got a girlfriend or a friend or a buddy on the boat... We went out with a podcast. Remember, as a podcaster, his dad, and they hooked up. They got smacked twice on that thing.
That was the night. Yep, that was the first night. Yep.
And it's a really cool bait, man. It's a great downsized bait. 6-inch Slammer Fatty. Sign up for the Titan Junior. Sign up for the Slammer Fatty. Get you a podcast mug. Other than that, Jay, we're in the doldrums of winter. It is cold. It really is disgusting. So we're going to do some Q&A this week. I've been on the boat all day. I've frozen to death. I'm so cold, Jay. Hold me.
It is freezing up here. It's single digits.
Well.
Fresh snow on the ground. Probably going to be opening the snowmobiles any minute.
Jay, I've been single digits my whole life. Anyway, Jack says, I'm from Maine, and when I go up north to musky fish, I always run into folks, we don't pre-screen the questions here. You know that after all these years. Mm-hmm. I always run into ne'er-do-wells that love eating muskies. I do not support this. Please discuss your opinion on this and how it's done. Okay. The classic catch and release, the classic, if the limit's 30 inches, do I take a fish? The classic whatever, right? There are some locations. I think it's the same guy I had on the boat that was really cool. That was talking about, like, Maine considers some of these fish to be invasive and they don't have a reg or, you know, somebody's watered this or that. The best way to deal with people that want to keep muskies is to simply just look at them and move on with your life. I don't know what else to do. It's been the age old issue, right? 36-inch limit and some guy's keeping a fish. You can sit there and get mad about it. You can sit there and flip out. You can sit there and say the DNR doesn't know what they're doing. don't put any energy into it. It's a losing battle because at the end of the day, if the regulations say, you know, XYZ is a legal fish to harvest, then it's a legal fish to harvest. I hate to say that, but to heck with it. The best thing to do is to change hearts and minds in a cool way, being verbose, being negative, being combative is not going to help anything, right?
No, it really never does.
The main element
is time, unfortunately. I mean, it took a while for our area to get introduced to that, probably in the late 80s and all that.
Some of you West Virginia guys might remember there's a thing that went on. A lot of my family members were part of this back in the day. And I'm talking 60s, Jay, right?
Yeah.
Printing pamphlets that says it takes a bigger man to let a muskie go than to keep one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right? Okay. Well, at that
was like
time,
the push back
that
then?
That was the push. It's like, you got to be a bigger man to let one. I mean, just tell the people. Be like, listen, they have no table value. Right?
Yeah, right.
And it's not really a you know, you're not doing anything. I don't know. I mean, we've been fighting that forever. There's lakes up north where people catch and keep 30-inch fish, Jay. It just is what it is. And you can sit there and make yourself look like a real douche canoe on the internet, you know, fighting with people online or saying this or saying that. I mean, it goes back to the same thing, dude. I hate more than anything is some person like wants to get in the sport of muskie fishing and they catch a fish and the hold's not perfect in a picture and somebody's like, wah, 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 wah. Right. And they say this and they say that. And that person feels really crappy about it. That's not how you educate, you know? When I've ran into people that keep muskies, the only thing I've ever felt, and maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but the only commentary I've ever felt that resonated was the compliment sandwich, right? And that really worked with people psychologically. So let's say, Jay, let's have a role play. We don't role play enough on the podcast, right? Would you like to role play with me, Jay?
Sure, yeah.
So you are a complete nitwit, and you have caught a 35-inch muskie on that body of water we love to fish topwater on, where you can catch 35-inch muskies and take them home legally, right?
Done.
Right? So we're at the boat ramp. You come up to me and you show me your dead fish. So all what right. would you say? Hey, man, check this out, right? Or give me something.
Look at this one I got.
Right? And I would go,
big fish.
Big fish. I go, great job. You know, catching a muskie is a really tough thing. Congratulations. Right? I'd follow up by saying this. You know, what's interesting about muskies, they are not really good at procreation. Right? And if you want to catch bigger and better muskies, you got to let those ones go. You got to let the smaller fish go, and you're not going to have impact on the environment, but still a great job on that catch. That's it. That's the only thing I think that it would even resonate. If you come up to me at the ramp and show me some dead muskie, I'm going to recoil, right? And I'm going to go, ugh. But if I go, hey, listen, you dumb SOB, don't be killing all the fish because X, Y, and Z. That's not going to resonate, right? Kindness resonates. Give them the compliment sandwich. Great catch. You know, if you want to catch bigger and better muskies, you need to let that fish that size go. Yeah. You know, because you're going to be disappointed when you're cutting that Y bone on that fish. And it tastes like an old shoe.
Or you could relate a story to them that's just like, you know what? I kept a muskie back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm only after one thing, and that's a super trophy. I'm letting all the smaller ones go.
Right.
Because I occasionally, you know, tie into a good one, but, you know, that's the goal. And then maybe set, you know, I'm looking for something 52 or better for my wall.
You know, the
you know,
other
until
thing,
then, I'm done keeping them. You know, that's
yeah,
just me.
I mean, the other thing is lobby your DNR. You know, but I mean, getting up in arms does very little to influence people. It really does. Negativity has very little influence on folks, right?
It you doesn't. Just nope.
If you have a cause, right, you have a goal, and you want to influence people, coming out in a negative manner does little to nothing. It polarizes, right? Let's say I don't like Jay, and I don't think Jay's a great person, or I think Jay's this or that, and I'm going to come out and I'm going to say all kinds of horrible things about Jay. It does little to nothing. Right. Just like if I come out saying and Jay shoots a spike. Right. Well, it's better to give the compliment sandwich to say, you know, great job on that spike deer. But if you'd let that one slide, you would have bigger and better deer. You know, give them the compliment sandwich. That's the way to approach that. It's the age old quest. Do your best. You know, get involved with Muskies Inc. Get involved with some conservatory programs. Lobby your DNR, man. And I'll tell you what DNR is like. So people that work at DNRs have generally master's degrees in fishery, right? Find somebody with a PhD and have them write a proposal. That's the way to get things done. And there are people with fisheries degrees that have doctorates. There are people that know how to communicate in a manner that resonates with people at departments of fishery. Now, your angry email to say whatever, if I write an email to the Wisconsin DNR and it says, Todd Johnson caught a muskie and kept it on such and such lake and he's a real SOB. No one cares, right?
Nope.
But if you write a statement or a proposal or something that has impact, that it speaks their language, it will resonate. Yeah. That's what the beauty of muskie clubs are. They used to be. I don't think there's so much that anymore. I think a lot of those have turned into, I'm the president of the muskie club. Look at me. I'm the best guy here. But we need to fix that. And that's a whole other podcast. But, you know, the mutual goal or the end goal being, hey, let's do what's best for the fishery. If you speak the language of the DNR, it's more likely to resonate, right? So anytime you're writing a state agency, you're writing someone that matters, don't make it about feelings. Make it about conservation. Make it about the ecological impact, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and benefiting the area, too, in a multitude of ways.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it goes a long way.
It's just, Jay, it's been the age-old battle. You're going to,
yep.
Guys, you're fooling yourself. You don't think there's some crappie guy that reeled in a 31-incher and bonked it on the head. Get over it. You just have to move on.
Got to accept your losses, right?
And the more you crap talk that guy on the old Facebook, which is like low IQ central, but if you're banging on the Facebook on Herbert Jensen caught a muskie and ate it, Herbert Jensen's going to kill every muskie there subsequently. You know what I'm saying? Educate. Don't humiliate. That's it.
Yep. Right?
Whatever. I'm going to soapbox for about 4 hours if I don't shut up. Daniel, love the podcast. Having an electronics question. Among the forward-facing sonar options, Garmin, Lowrance, Hummingbird, Mega Live, Hummingbird, Regular C360, which, in your opinion, gives the most detailed image of the terrain in front of the boat? Not talking about the view of moving fish or your lure, strictly the best 3D representation of what is ahead of the boat. Wow. So, I cannot say that I fished on a boat with the Hummingbird live. I've been on a boat with 360. I've seen the Lowrance. They're a live option in Garmin, right? Garmin and Lowrance. Garmin is better than Lowrance. As far as what is ahead of us, as far as topographical or cover or structure, or maybe bait fish on cover or structure, it's going to come down to Garmin, LiveScope, or Hummingbird 360, right? Lowrance is a slightly narrower view of the Garmin. Depends on your cup of tea. You know, Garmin, you got to have facing forward, where Hummingbird spinning on its own independently. So that might be something you want to look at. In a perfect world, you might have both. If you're looking for the edge, rarely with Garmin, I'm looking ahead of myself. I'm looking at edges. I'm looking at where's the brake line, where's the cover, where's the structure. So Garmin does that really well. Hummingbird, I'd say, is a better exploratory thing with that 360, right?
Okay.
Which the 360 is spinning continuously. It's doing its thing. It's sort of this constantly panning mechanism. So if I'm looking for edges, I'm looking for cover structure, what's ahead of me, I think maybe the 360 might be a better option, right? Where Garmin subsequently a tier down from that might be Lowrance. The Mega Live is sort of crummy in my opinion, whatever, for what it's worth. It's going to be one of those deals where, you know, I can see what's going on there, but I'm more focused on boat side. I'm more focused on the edge as far as what's ahead of me. He also says, does live sonar require matching scroll speed to boat speed, similar to like side imaging? Not really. As you move the boat, things are moving. So live is happening regardless. If you're one of those guys where you're like constantly on the pedal or constantly moving forward, it should keep up, right? I can't speak for 360 because I don't have it on my boat, but you know, your Garmin, your Lowrance, what you're seeing is what is there in that immediate moment. So that's what to consider. Randy, when did Titan Juniors get here? Me need. Love the podcast. Me need. Caught my PB on a KY Crush Titan this year. Thank you so much. Jay.
Yep.
When do the Titan Juniors get here?
Right around March 1st.
That would be...
Yep, that's the expected delivery date, the debut date on the Titan Junior.
Looking for a solid yet inexpensive trolling reel to get dialed in. What are your guys' opinions on the different trolling reels that have line counters? What do you think is the best option overall? Jay?
Akuma Convector.
Run those, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see what we got here. Line counter.
They're right around $100. I mean, they're
$99.99.
Yeah.
Okay. I ran those. I still run the Convector. It's a big round reel, but being a left-handed angler, you know, if I'm setting up a trolling pass for myself or clients, it's easier for it to be left-handed. So those were some of the first ones I could get with lefties. There's a low-profile Convector. With that being said, I would say probably the best overall, if I was going to do one or two, say I'm in like a one trolling rod state, right?
Mm-hmm.
That Akuma Coldwater. It's a better reel overall. I mean, the Convector's rock solid, but the Coldwater's a little bit more ergonomical. It looks cooler. It's a smaller profile. The line counter glitches out less. Like with the Convector, mine's glitch at, like, I would say every fifth time I let some line out, I'll have to reset it and start at zero and then bring it back, right? I mean, it's a $99 reel. Come on. The Akuma Convector. Now, with that being said, I'd say probably the most rock solid bang for the buck, not going to fail you, with that Pin Rival, though. And they don't make it in the lefty. So if you're a lefty, don't even tune out. Just go, meh. But the Penn Rival is $69. And Penn makes ridiculously good reels. So that's going to be a really good option. If you're a right-handed dude, you want 1, 2, maybe 3, 4, whatever. You're actually going to get 3, 4 really good line counters for $70 opposed to $100. If it's like, okay, you know. I mean, dude, if money's no options, a freaking Dakota. Right?
Shimano, yeah.
Yeah. That's a Cadillac. It's a ridiculously good reel, right? But, I mean, for me, I mean, a line counter is a line counter. I'm not looking for anything special. I have a trolling reel. Akuma Convector, they make a lefty. If you're a right-handed dude like most of us, go with a pin. They're all the same. If you got a couple extra bucks, you only need 1 or 2. Akuma, if money's no object, I'm going with that Dakota. What do you think? Make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Daiwa's got some, too. Yeah. I mean, there's a multitude of reels under $200, and there's a lot of them are close to $100. So, like you said, you don't have to spend an arm and a leg. It's not as necessary with a trolling reel.
I'm not like a monster Daiwa fan, right? But, if you're throwing a Lexa, just get the freaking Lexa line counter. It's going to feel the same, right? And so it's going to be a familiar platform for setting drag and things of that nature. But, you know, if you're looking for 1 or 2, $139, you need a couple, $69. You know, you're a lefty like me, the $99 convectors. You know, you can't go wrong. I don't think there's a bad one. The cool thing is we do a combo. So you can get a shield rod, trolling rod, and the pin for $319, which is cool. So that's going to be a good option for you if you're looking for a setup. But, I mean, I don't think there's a bad one. You know, if you're setting your drag appropriately and you're rocking and rolling, like I said, you can't go wrong with the pin anywhere from there is up. Matt, does the rubber bait matter? They're all big old hunks of poured crap with tails. Wow.
Does the rubber bait matter?
He said, does the rubber bait matter? They're all poor hunks of crap with tails. What actually makes a difference? So,
tons of differences.
Okay, so we had Bulldogs, right? Then came the Medusa. Now we've got Toothy Tufts. We've got Alien Eels. We've got, you know, freaking, there were Storm Baits at one point. There's, you name it, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's taking a swing at rubber baits. What matters to me is feedback from the fish and rate of fall. Right? For me, Medusas seem to plane out better. A little bit more hang time. Right? If we went 1 for 1, like a heavy Medusa and a heavy Bulldog, or a mid and a mid, shallow. Medusas, just because of the way their bottom of the bait is a little bit more surface area, hang a little bit more, where the Bulldogs descend a little bit more. That's all that matters, right? So if I'm fishing a deep bite, I want to compare the two. I mean, I want to compare a pounder and a mega Medusa. I want to compare a standard and a standard. I mean, there's no real way to dial in until you have that experience on the water. But it seems to be a hang time and sort of like their angle of descent. That would be the big question there, right?
Yeah, there's big differences between them. Yeah, sure. In that regards.
So it matters. I mean, it does. Hot fish, no. If muskies are fired up and it is low-hanging clouds, it is prefrontal, it is midsummer, you could rip a tube sock through there, Jay.
Or a hot dog
mm-hmm. and a tube sock. Any combination you're looking for, yeah, a broad, right. Whatever.
It's all about the rigging, sure.
You rig it up and rip it, it's going to work. The rest of the time when we're dealing with a little bit more finicky fish, it's going to matter, which would be hang time, rate of descent. So the quicker a bait falls, the quicker you need to retrieve it from fouling on the bottom or getting caught and stuff, right? So that's what we're looking at with rubber baits. I mean, you know, the other side of the story is I know a couple guys that they buy nothing but shallow versions of these, and they weight them as needed. So they've got a couple shallow dogs or a shallow this or a shallow that, and they just add weight as needed.
Now, there you go.
You need to be observant to what's necessary to trigger a strike, right? But if you don't know, you need to experiment and go, okay, I've got a Medusa that's mid and a Bulldog mid or a heavy, shallow, and see which one sort of gets the most reaction. I'm not trying to cop out on that. It just simply is what it is. So you need to experiment, you know.
I get, podcast guys all the time emailing from, you know, like West Virginia and Pennsylvania and stuff like that. And they're, actually quite a few guys recently have been doing that are commonly all fishing these small rivers. And, you know, and it's just like, you know, you grew up doing that.
Yeah.
And creaking. And, And what they're discovering is they're trying Bulldogs and when, in fact, they should be running the shallow version.
Right.
You know, because they're quite often fishing.
Fowling,
hang up areas.
It's wood. And it's just
shallow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rundowns, below dams, a litany of things where sometimes it's a shallow dog that needs to be fished slower or, you know, I mean, yes, there's a difference between the Bulldog and the Deuce and the other river baits. Is it the action and the undulation of the tails? Probably not. Is it hang time? I would bet my house on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's going to boil down to me, for me. Okay. This has got a little more hang, or it stays up. When I rip it and it's the top of the rip, it hangs a little bit more, and that's where they're getting hit. So you got to play with the two. Connor, I'm looking for an all-around casting and trolling reel. Money is an issue. What reel that's a line counter also casts well? Wow. I've not looked at it that way, Jay. Where we're going, okay, I'm going to have a casting / line counter reel. We literally just did this a second ago, but I think you said Daiwa Lexas are essentially a Lexa with a line counter, right?
Yeah, you might be right. I think they are.
Let's look
at that real quick. Yeah. Never thought of it that way as a
casting.
If you could use it as a primary, you know, casting. Yeah.
I'm looking at it. That's a Daiwa Lexa with a line counter. Yeah. I mean, if you're cool with casting and
let's look at the lever. What kind of?
It's a thumb.
It's a good. It's a thumb bar.
That'd be the only one.
I'm trying to think of that reel.
So I mean, there's a Convector low profile, and the Lexa. I mean, there's no difference in the casting versus trolling Lexas or the Convectors, the low profile Convectors. It just happens to count the line turns. So if you're looking for a one and done, you could get it done with that reel.
You could do it. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, it'll do it.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it if you're just going, okay, I'm going to cast. I mean,
yeah, and you're going to troll that much as well too. You know, where you really are going to get the time on both. You know, mm-hmm. Let's say split the difference. It's like, yeah, that'd be a good call.
Yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you could. I mean, there's not that much difference between Alexa and the trolling Alexa. Maybe gear ratio. Let's look at the gear ratio real quick. They make a 6-3-1. 249 on that one. There's the Alexa 300. So you get Alexa 300, 6-3-1, which would be a really good general casting reel that happens to have a line counter. I don't see a problem with it. Who cares? Nothing wrong with that. If you want a one and done, that would be the ticket. The Akuma, I happen to have it open, the Akuma Convector. Let's see. We don't have a gear ratio up on him. It's 5-4. Okay. So
the
Convector, because the cold water's round. The only reel that I would recommend, I'm looking at them all right now, the only one you could cast and troll is going to be the Lexa 6-3-1. Effectively throughout their entire thing. So if you want a casting and a trolling general purpose, it checks all the boxes. You can cast it, you can troll it, you can slow roll it, you can burn it. That'd be the one. $199, you're done. If you're a one rod setup, man, I don't see anything wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Who cares? Sean, what is your recommendation? It's more trolling stuff. Sean, oh, it's trolling motors. What is your recommendation as far as brands of trolling motors? Looking to upgrade for 2023, what should I be looking for in regards to a trolling motor? Okay, general rule of thumb for me when it comes to trolling motors, more is better. Right?
In terms of thrust.
In terms of thrust. Yep. Thank you. So, I don't think anything below 80 pounds is worth it unless you're in a John boat, right? Jay gave me a John boat a couple years ago. I have a 40-pound thrust hand tiller for that. I fly around, right? It's like a rocket ship. But it's also like a tiny little boat. If you've got a 16, 17, 18, 19, 20-foot boat, you got to be 80 pounds or plus. The rule of thumb when buying a trolling motor is buy as much thrust as you can afford to buy. Minimally 80, preferably 112 if you can get it. Right. Mm-hmm. 112 is generally 36 volt. Now, you have a few more options with this thing. You have Motor Guide, which is almost out of the picture now. Minn Kota, right? Garmin and Lowrance. So Garmin and Lowrance make 24/36 volt trolling motors that are brushless, which in theory should last forever, right? I'm running an Altrex on my boat. I'm running a 80-pound 24-volt system. That is a brushed motor. The Altera and the Altrex, I believe, are the same power head, which are both 36, 24 brushed, whereas the Ghost and the Force are 24, 36 interchangeable by selection that will go from 80 to 112 based on the voltage. So it becomes a consideration of the biggest motor you can afford and the biggest battery capacity you can carry in your boat. If you don't have room for three 12-volt batteries, 112's out of the question. You see what I'm saying? You got to have room for at least two batteries, if not three.
That's the way to go if you can swing it.
If you can swing it. You know, I'm running on my boat. My boat's super light, so I can get away with two 12s. They make 24-volt batteries. I just found that out recently, by the way. But there's some different crazy options when it comes to lithium and all this different crap. Just overpowered's better than underpowered. It just simply is. Just like an outboard, right? The more you can afford, the better you'll be in the long run. So, you know, I don't know if they make a 65-pound thrust, but I don't think I'd go any lower than that. They might. I think it's 55, I see, but
you're talking general rule of thumb, like a 16-foot boat.
Not, right. I mean, a 16-foot boat, I mean, I want at least 80. I want 80, period. Because big windy days, all this stuff. The other prerequisite for me on trolling motors anymore is spot lock. Outside of that, you're pretty much good.
Spot lock is huge.
You know, I've got
critical.
I've got that crazy, like, iPilot Link, right? So I can drive my boat from my phone. I could do this. I could do that. I don't use it. It doesn't make sense for me. Musky fishing. I don't need to replicate some route consistently. So that's not important to me. What's important is spot lock. Spot lock is great in heavy, heavy, heavy wind. The vast majority of the time I'm not using it. Legitimately using spot lock in a fish catching scenario 2 or 3 times a year. So if it comes down to you can't get spot lock, but you can get an 80-pound motor without spot lock versus this, that, or the other, just go 80-pound thrust. That seems to be the general rule of thumb, is 80 to 112. Anything below that's fooey in my book. Right? You know, even on a small vessel, if you got an 18-footer, 16-footer, you'll appreciate the power more than you will the other features. you know, 24 volt system, you can usually find a place for the batteries.
Well, you might rarely, you know, ever have it on 10, but it's just like if you're at 50% power most of the day when you need to move, it's just
right. Like it's you don't, the that's too, the so. Thing is you don't want to have to run at max all day.
Yeah.
If you're running at max all day, I could sit here and, I mean, we could look at the math on amp hours and it's just like, this battery has X amount of amp hours reserved, and this one, and it's a 20-volt system, blah, 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 right? And you're eating it alive versus you don't want to run red line all day long, right? Just like your engine. You don't want to outboard that you have to max out to move your boat on plane, obviously. So when it comes to a trolling motor, you want a motor that, it you know, half speed, three-quarter speed, your boogie-woogie in. That means you can make it all day long. That means in rough conditions, you can make it the entire day. That would be sort of the rule of thumb. As far as brand, man, like I said, I don't think there's a bad one on the market anymore. I've had the motor got an XI3 and XI5 at one point. Not a great motor, not a bad motor. On the remote control, they're amazing. The Altrex is bad to the bone. Buka runs the Altera. I think is the Altera, the self-deploy one, right? He runs the one that self-deploys. I don't know all the names here. I mean, the Lowrance and the Garmin are phenomenal. Both are pretty pricey, but I don't think there's a bad one on the market. Allegedly, when it comes to these brushless motors, like the Garmin and the Lowrance are supposed to last way longer, but, you know, how long do you want your trolling motor to last? You know, is it a lifetime purchase? You know, some of us, if you spend $5,000, it's not the end of the world. If you spend $2,000, it's not the end of the world. So get the best you can afford. That would be my rule of thumb. Get the best you can afford where you're comfortable. That would be it. You know, and if you can afford a 30-pound thrust Minn Kota Brute, God bless you. You'll catch fish. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. Yeah. Now, here's the thing, and this is a whole other conversation, right? I've had a couple Pepsis here, Jay, and we'll get to that in a moment. But financial limitations do not always lead to fishing deficiencies. You just got to be smarter, right? And I'm going to crawl down the rabbit hole. You hear about people like, low-income people need to budget better. No, it's people that are income deficient are often very good at budgeting. You just need to run your boat smarter, right? Which means if I've got a 30-pound thrust trolling motor, guess what? I need a brick with a rope because I'm going to be anchoring a bunch. I need to play my current better. I need to be smarter about my boat control where I might have a deficiency in a trolling motor. So if you get smart about anchoring, you get smart about playing the wind, you're going to be in good condition, right? Because for a lot of years, there were not 80 and 112-pound thrust trolling motors, Jay. And people caught fish.
Mm-hmm. True. Right? Very true.
There were $80,000 Rangers coming off the lot with 55-pound thrust trolling motors. It's about playing it smart. So if budget's an issue, you can't afford the big boy toys, think about anchoring. Think about reading the wind. Before you start a spot, go, which way? Just take 5 seconds and go, okay, the wind's blowing in my face. So if I start at the very top of this spot, which way is the wind going to play? And how can I fight the wind or play the wind to fish this spot effectively?
Absolutely.
That's it.
I started out fishing.
That's it.
100%.
Yeah. Don't let money discourage you. I hate talking about expensive things or this, that, and the other. Everybody's at a different place, and that's cool. You know, it's God bless you. I mean, it's whatever, man. We're all in different places, but take what you got and make the most of it, but be smart with what you got. Sometimes it's more rewarding to catch a 50-incher out of a John boat than it is out of a $100,000 boat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, anyway... Walleye Willie writes, I love that name, Walleye Willie. I've heard you talk about trolling with monofilament before. When and why and where would you actually troll for muskies with mono still? It seems so crazy. Thanks, Willie. Okay. I have one Akuma Convector in the boat. this spooled up with 30-pound Berkeley Big Game, Jay. The neon version. Thank you very much. That reel.
Yeah, I remember that thing. Yeah. Right.
The freaking green Berkeley Big Game 30-pound stuff.
Whew. Right.
That reel resides in my rod locker about 350 days out of the year.
Okay.
If it's a how many days in the year? 352 or something, right?
Oh, 365.
Whatever. I'm not great with years.
Give or take. Right.
I've had a Pepsi or 12. So 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days a year. Will I break that reel out, hook it up on a trolling rod, and go, I'm going to try this amongst my other rods, right? It's really because I need to get things exceptionally deep and slow. Mono goes deeper faster. It just simply does. It's more hydrodynamic. Braided line has contouring. If you feel braid, run your finger down braid, there's a friction to it, right? It's got texture.
It does.
Where mono of the same diameter will go deeper because there's less friction. It just digs in faster on trolling. I'm not breaking that stuff out unless I have to, and it's usually a baby depth raider, a little Cisco kid, a rattle trap on a freaking dipsy diver. I need to get a small bait deep at slower speeds. That's why when I break out the mono. That's it. Outside of that crap, I bet you I've spooled that. For the amount of fish I've caught on that in the last 4 or 5 years, I bet you it might be 4 or 5 fish. But when I need it, I got it. Right? It's an option. It's old school. We used to fish nothing but 20, 30-pound mono. And you can sort of get to those running depths.
Okay, it has nothing to do with all the stretch and small baits, small hooks?
No.
Okay.
Which is not a bad point, though. You know, but with modern rods, you know, I mean, when we were casting mono, Jay, it was 6-6s, 7-6s. But, you know, by the time that thing sort of smacks, I've really not had a hook penetration problem with smaller baits on mono with these crazy rods we got now. So I'm still running on my 8s, 8-6s. But it's purpose driven. The mono, having a mono reel laying around, is the same comparison to, I have not run freaking wire in years, right? But sometimes you can run 4 baits all at the same depth, and sometimes the rod that's running wire will get smacked all day long. It's just simply different, right? Now, with that being said, I think I prefaced my commentary about monofilament last time, but I'll do it again. If you're new to the sport, don't go out there and troll monofilament, right? Make sure you know exactly the knot you need to use. Know that you need to inspect that line. Know how to set the drag on mono. Make sure you spend time with it. But if you understand it, you've done it in the past, you're going to put some time and effort into doing it the right way. It can be effective, just like trolling wire still can be. We used to troll wire all the time, Jay. I used to have these red pin reels full wire. And you go, that's just a lost art. Right? You have these little spring tips. I can't even remember the name of them. These little snubber tips, right?
Yeah. I've never messed with that stuff.
Mm-mm. It's dynamite. And it sort of sings in the water, too. It's got this hum.
Yes.
And I've always
been around it.
Yeah. And I've always wondered if the hum pulled in fish. Mm. It's just a lost art. And like I said, trolling mono, man. Depth raiders and Cisco kids, they were designed around mono. Just is what it is. You know, I mean, I'm going to set my drag a little tighter. I'm going to make sure it pulls smooth. I'm not going to have a reel that's sort of grippy. Or, you know, braided line sort of allows us to be a little bit lazy with our drag settings. It just sort of sticks. You know what I'm saying? Mono, you're like, okay, you better be paying attention. You better check it before you send it. And so if I'm going to run the mono, not as clean. I'm inspecting the first 40 feet of that line. I let it through my hands. I'm going, okay, there's no nicks. Everything is cool. And that drag is, it's perfect. It slides, but it's got tension and the rod's right and yada, yada, yada. You have to be a little bit more thorough with that stuff. Same thing with trolling wire. Holy crap. You can't take your clicker off with wire. If you take your clicker off, guess what happens? That thing puffs up and you'll never get it unbird's nested. Right? You have
it
to
sounds
be
bad.
So gentle with that stuff. So there's a little bit more TLC. But if you're in a tough bite, you go, I have to catch a muskie. It is a cold front. It is high, bright sun conditions. Things are nasty. I need to get a small bait deep, but I need to get it down there at slower speeds. Mono is going to lessen the amount of line you need out. So when I'm looking at that, I go, okay, I need some strategic boat control. I need a small bait deep, but I need some great contouring. I need it to really follow me. I really need to bang into cover and structure. That's what I'm thinking mono. All right, weird question. I saw this one there, right? Chase, me and my boat partner recently had a large blow up regarding Pepsis in the boat. What are your feelings on having some Pepsis while muskie fishing? Wow. So I'll tell you flat out, as a guy that loves some Pepsis, and we'll call him here on the podcast, absolutely full stop no. Absolutely no. Right? Number one, you're going to miss more fish. You're going to be more inaccurate caster. You're going to be more dangerous in the boat. What I'll tell you, I mean, Jay, we fished a million times together. You never seen me have a Pepsi in the boat.
No. Nope.
Right?
And there's enough ways to get hurt.
That's what it, the do when we, and I have unfortunately seen some bad things happen on the water. Not in my boat. If you've not heard the Man Overboard podcast, it's hilarious, but it ended well. I've seen a couple incidents over the years that didn't end well for people. Both of those incidents involved drinking. For me, save it for when you get in. That's always been a rule on my boat. Stay sharp and stay safe and be smart about it, because I mean, if you can't go 7, 8, 9, 10 hours out there without that being part of the game, you know, I'm not real keen on fishing with you, because you miss too many fish, dumb things happen. And I'll tell you, man, when you're on the water, things happen. When bad things happen, they happen fast. That's it. I'm not going to sit here and preach about it, but Chase, that would be my opinion. Jay, what do you think? Is it a maybe for you?
100%. No, 100%. I mean, with you. Yeah. I mean, we're not talking about crappie fishing here.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going bank fish, me and Jay are going to go down and get some chicken liver down there. We're going to go catfishing. Oh, heck yeah. But I mean, somebody's got to drive the boat. Somebody's got to be responsible. Things go bad fast. I mean, much less, whatever. I'm not trying to sound like Uncle Steve at this point, but that's just where I'm at.
Yeah, I agree.
Larry, he says, Worf. He missed Jay. What do you think about Worf?
Worf? TNG?
Oh, yeah, man. He says, Worf is the best all-around spinning musky bait. Well, I think he wanted to say, what is the best all-around musky spinner bait? But I'm going with Worf as handedly the best musky spinner bait. What do you think? Kaplow?
Worf. What?
Worf. He said Worf is the best all-around musky spinner bait. What he meant, what is the best all-around musky spinner bait? But he said Worf.
So, okay.
Would Jay, in a scale of 1 to 10, would you be my Chadich?
Wow. Haven't brought that up in a while.
Yeah, you know what I mean by that. But anyway.
Yeah.
Chadich?
All around musky spinner baits. Oh, man. You can't pick one. I mean, it's just like, what are you doing with it? What are you doing with it?
Because, good point.
You know, again, I mean, applications, yeah.
It's just Ace is not a slot master and a figure eight. Okay, so Ace If we're going the
frame
big
size too.
Well, yeah. Let's go big.
You're talking big
like
frame?
Big yeah. frame. Ace runs slightly deeper than figure eight, right? Then you got the lunging, and the slot master just seems to hang. If I'm fishing the shallow, crappy stuff, like not crappy, like crappy the fish, I'm talking like the muck, the slot master, just because the head design just sort of starts to skip over
yeah,
a little bit
more.
Yeah,
the head design and the blade, right? You know, Colorado yeah. blade. You know, I like the smaller frames too with lift, you know, mm-hmm. if you're fishing really shallow and you're fishing pockets and cover and stuff, sure.
I mean, okay, if we were like going to do a 4-hour podcast on nothing but musky spinnerbaits, you could really crawl into it. But the slot master is made for the nastiest stuff. The way the frame is laid out, the way things sort of pull through the water, it's meant to come through the crap where the other options are not quite there. But then you got like rad dogs that run a little bit deeper. I'm a big blade changer on my spinnerbaits, right? So
yeah.
If I'm going for a general, like if I had to pick one, I'll just be honest with you. If I had to pick one, it's a slot master, right? Because you can add weight, take weight away from these things, but the slot master seems to come through junk a little bit easier, you know, or an ace. I like ace baits too. So it's going to be one of those things where you can augment those baits. I think it's situational. Like you said, what are you fishing? What are you doing? You know?
Yeah, I mean, look at like look at a lineup like the Rad Dogs, rough tackle uh-huh. stuff. I mean, you know, they've got it's pretty much all this big frame size comparable like right. a big ace, a little bit bigger than the Slotmaster 850s, but they've got different blade configurations mm-hmm. and then you can go to a larger lead head. You know, which will get it a little bit deeper. And then they've even got a super deep model and a trolling right. model, too. So
I mean,
pretty flexible stuff there.
Yeah, for casting, shallow water casting, I'm going with the Slot Master.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it just over the years, I throw it out, I bring it in, it comes in cleaner while still contacting cover. That would be my take for whatever it's worth. Yep. Sloppy Joe. Last one, Sam. When fishing weed beds, should I start on the tight edge or target the deeper edge? Is it based on frontal movement and lunar, or are you just starting shallow and working deep? Jay, what do you think? Is it a structure fishing thing? Because I think of cover and structure sort of in a synonymous manner. What do you think? Do we start shallow and work out deep, or we start deep and work out shallow, and why would you?
Yeah, start shallow and work out deep.
Yeah.
And what time of day are we talking here?
Yeah, the good point.
You know what I mean? We're
if talking, you start yeah, it in the morning, yeah.
Yeah, so, especially, right. Or let's say you work during the day, you know, and mm-hmm. and it's, let's say it's not the middle of the summer where it gets, what, 9:45 before it's dark. You know, you get off work, it's like you got 2 hours of light left. By the time you get out there, it's last hour.
Right.
Well, nothing wrong with that, you know. Go out there and give it heck for an hour, and it's just like, again, start shallow.
But if you start, let's say you start, you got off work at 11:30 on a typical, you know, middle of the road day, start on the deep edge of the middle of the day.
Then exactly. Yeah. That if you're starting at lunchtime.
Yeah.
Correct.
We're following the structural rules. The deep yes. water is the primary home of the fish. So mm-hmm. in the middle of the day, they'll be deeper, you know. Now, if you go out there and there's a storm front coming and things are looking awesome. Focus shallow, but you know, at the end of the day, you got to do it all. We've talked about a lot. You need to make an assessment where you go, I fished my two best weed beds and I hit them shallow, right? Well, let's go and do that again and fish them backwards, right? Let's throw the deep edge and check them out. Just be smart about that. Think about structure. Think about frontal movements. Think about everything that comes into play into musky fishing before you sort of commit to, I'm going to fish shallow, I'm going to fish mid, I'm going to fish deep. Be effective in all phases of that game. Jay.
Yes, Steve.
When did you fall in love with mumble rap?
About 3 hours ago. Probably.
Fantastic, folks. All right, Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Night, guys.
Later.
Who could forget the greatest mumble rap songs of musky fishing?
Musky 360 Records is proud to present the greatest musky mumble rap compilation ever compiled.
figure eights, Muskie Gang. Muskie Gang. Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang. Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang, Muskie Gang. Spending big cash on new baits. Don't mess around my figure eights, Muskie Gang.
But the hits don't end there.
To present the most mumbly musky compilation ever presented. You might not even know what they're saying.
When I was gone, made me dig it. Maybe I got to dig it. Moving up and run away, bring out dropping bombs like sonar. Same old day, same old night. Gotta catch up here somewhere. I don't care at all. You feel me throwing bass up.
Just 49 payments of $49.99 will get you 4,000 hours plus of the greatest musky mumble rap songs ever recorded.
Who could forget the timeless classic White Poseidon? I love mumbling.
I love muskies. And who doesn't, Jay? You can get the greatest muskie compilation of mumble rap today from Slime Life Records for just 69 payments of $69.99. This compilation could be yours. Elmer's standing by.
Man, we could be musky stars.